is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. A look at agriculture in Douglas County today. Evan Cruz here from Cruz Farms. Thanks for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So overall, how has the year gone for agricultural producers around the county?
You know, in general, it was a pretty tough year from the drought conditions starting early. I mean, the rain really cut off fairly early in the spring to the heat wave in June. It and then the continuing drought throughout the year. It really was a difficult year for agriculture in the county.
So talk about your experience in terms of the things that you were working on growing this year.
Well, we grow a lot of different things, and having a dry start to the year allows us to get in the field early, which is nice as long as irrigation supplies hold up as far as water being available. But that heat wave in June really threw a curveball, and we actually lost some plantings of things like corn. Other fruit trees took some real stress during that time. So having that heat that just really nothing around here is ready for it was a real curveball that hit hard.
And not only did we have the hottest day ever recorded in Roseburg, but we had so many days in a row with really no break.
Yeah, it is. And there's a compounding effect to that, that the trees can handle, or well, the plants in general can handle, a short period of extreme heat. But when they don't get the chance to recover and come back, they'll start to go into survival mode. And a lot of crops are really in their prime growing mode during that time of year. So converting over to a survival mode is not something that's going to lead to a good product.
Getting through that period of time, then, did that mean some things were done later?
No. If anything, it pushed things ahead, made things ripen a little bit earlier, or some things just didn't ripen at all. There was fruit hanging on the tree, and it dropped the fruit because it couldn't support that part of its biology.
So obviously that impacts you. And what about the water situation?
We had fields get water rights cut off earlier than we ever had before. And I know we've got pretty good water rights in most of our ground, so there's other people that definitely would have been hit harder by that. I know the curtailments on that sort of thing started earlier than the water master has ever done it before. I think most growers were in pretty good communication with the water master this year, more than other years. We had to purchase some extra water from Galesville for certain crops to make sure that they could make it through the summer.
So how does that work when you're purchasing it from a place elsewhere? That doesn't mean you have to go there and get it, right?
No, Galesville is stored water. It's managed by several different agencies, but it all goes through basically the water master's office. And so if there's water available and you need it on a field that doesn't have an active water right, so one that's been shut down because of low flow in the river, basically you buy the water from the Galesville Dam and they put it in the river for you to use. And it goes down river. That's our conduit. And that's where we get our irrigation from.
Wow. And that not only is an expense, and logistically, you've got to figure out timing, a lot of things involved in irrigation.
It is. And just running the pumps is expensive. They're big electric motors. And turning on irrigation in a major way a month earlier than we typically would definitely changes things for us.
Did all the heat wave, did that segment of the summer cause you to shift what time of day you were irrigating?
We were irrigating 24 hours a day that time of year.
Wow.
So, that's usually when we start up irrigation, we do try to run it 24 hours a day, get across the field quickly, and then turn it off. But that prompted extra water.
And obviously, when you're having to run it in the middle of the afternoon, you are losing some of it getting from point A to B.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I've switched a lot of our crops over to drip irrigation, where the water is you know, trapped by a little bit of soil or a plastic mulch. And the crops that I had under drip irrigation definitely fared better, having that perfect amount of moisture available. So there are some cultural practices that can help. And I switched to those cultural practices for other reasons. And a year like this, it really did pay off.
So anything perform especially well this year?
You know, our pumpkin patch is fantastic. It was planted after the heat wave. The soil was very warm when I planted it. We were getting it ready during the heat wave. But it had a fantastic year to grow in. And the pumpkins were big and healthy and plentiful. And it's just nice to see for kind of the wrap up of the busy season.
How long does it take? What's the timing from when you plant to when you harvest on those?
Pumpkins we plant kind of mid to early June. You know, it takes a long time to get them to grow. There's a lot of things that will change how quickly they ripen. So I actually split the planting. I do one, say, the 10th of June, and then another planting about a week to 10 days later.
And now, do you still have them available out there?
Absolutely, yep.
Because there is a rumor that, like, Halloween or something's coming up.
Yeah, and so we've been running the pumpkin rides on the weekends for people. You know, in years past, we've done the school groups and everything during the week by appointment, but there just isn't, with COVID and all the restrictions, there isn't that much demand for it. So we're open on the weekends, and there's still lots of pumpkins available.
So you've talked about the weather and its impact. Were there particular crops that got hit especially hard by the harsh heat?
The berry crops, we had, you know, blackberries and blueberries and stuff in season when that hit, and that was really, really hard on them. There was some recovery, but there was just plain loss. Nothing you could do to save that fruit. The interesting thing about it is those crops are susceptible to an invasive fruit fly we have, the spotted wing Drosophila, and that heat wave basically wiped out 99.9% of the population. So it cleaned up that pest and really made it a non-issue for the rest of the year. So I guess we always try to look for a silver lining in things, and that was nice.
A lot of farms in the area that you know, produce and sell to the public. Any idea how many?
I don't have any idea how many, and it can fluctuate. I was driving out Melrose, and actually old family friends of ours own the land, you know, they ran livestock on it and everything, and this year they've got a pumpkin patch that's open to the public. So, you know, it's always fluctuating, and it's a pretty easy thing to get into in a small way. You know, grow something and hop into one of the farmers markets or something. So as far as a produce market, there's not very many of us.
What are the top crops in the county?
Well, grapes is the obvious one. You look at probably acreage and the number of people working in the industry. It's pretty big. Livestock as well, livestock and hay, if you kind of put pasture production in there. That's probably the biggest as far as acreage goes. And now we've got blueberries as a pretty big crop as well. Other growing crops, filberts, or some people call them hazelnuts. There's a lot of filbert acreage going in. And from there, it really gets down to be pretty small on any given crop.
And obviously, there's certain things that are probably very hard to grow here, but maybe in some places can, just because of the diversity of the climate.
We do have a lot of microclimates. For instance, there's olive growers out in Glide that are definitely facing some difficulties, but they're getting a crop of olives off of that, so you can get locally grown olive oil. And most people think about olive oil being Mediterranean or, you know, almost subtropical type climates, and that's just not the case.
More with Evan Cruz when we come back to interview a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245, a News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1. Tomorrow, Dr. Cora Hart of ADAPT. We'll talk about depression. This is Depression Awareness Month. And we'll cover some depression-related topics and see what help there is available around the area. Evan Cruz talking about agriculture in Douglas County. What are some of the overall challenges facing the ag community as we kind of roll through this pandemic time?
I think there's two different categories that growers fall into, and right now it's either you use a lot of labor, hired labor, or you don't. And for the outfits that do use a lot of hired labor, finding that labor, keeping that labor around, and also dealing with the increased burden by OSHA due to COVID regulations has been very difficult. And I think most of us are looking forward to the day to where we don't have to deal with those extra regulations.
Because you're already dealing with so many things, including, as you talked about at the beginning, weather, which you can't control, as a challenge as to whether you make money or how much money you make or do you lose money. And then this adding an expense, but not necessarily providing a pathway to making more money.
Well, mentioning weather again, there were also heat-related and smoke-related special rules from OSHA. And so making sure employees that are working outside in the heat have reasonable access to what they need to stay healthy. Most of these rules coming out of Salem were statewide, and some of them were not compatible with areas that are hotter or drier or a little bit more intense weather than up in Salem. So there was quite a bit of pushback on those, but the emergency rules got written pretty quickly and caused some problems for people.
Did any of those get adjusted as things went on following the input that state officials got?
Not in a major way. It was mostly just a hassle to try to comply.
What about other regulatory issues, you know, even take the pandemic out of it, that you're dealing with, whether from Salem or nationally?
There seems to be there's a lot of fiddling that happens with what we do in agriculture, the equipment we buy needing, in my opinion, excessive emissions controls on it. The cost of equipment has really skyrocketed. So, you know, it does give us good motivation to take care of what we need. But if you're going to retool in any way, it's very expensive. I had something else in my mind, but it escaped me.
Well, and I know that some of those pieces of equipment are incredibly expensive.
They sure can be. You know, people drive by a tractor and they don't realize that it's the most expensive, you know, rolling down the road from field to field. They don't realize it's probably the most expensive vehicle on that road.
How much can some of those tractors cost?
The ones you see around here, you're probably looking at, $150,000 for a big one, maybe $200,000 for kind of the top end of what you'd see in the county. But it can go way up from there. Farm equipment is extremely expensive.
And does it operate better than the more simpler, smaller equipment of years past?
It, one of the biggest thing differences is that it has lower emissions. In modern agricultural equipment, there's less particulate matter coming out of the exhaust than what's going into the air intake. So they're actually rolling air cleaners. And some of us feel that the cost needed to accomplish that is a bit excessive. But there are some creature comforts. That definitely is more comfortable to be in a tractor for 12 hours in a modern rig than it was from something 30 years ago. One tractor can do more. The horsepower is bigger. The fuel efficiency is up, things like that.
What are some of the creature comforts inside?
Mostly air conditioning is what we're looking for. That's the biggest one. We also, there's a lot has gone into like the seats to support backs and reduce back damage.
Wow. So, I haven't been on a tractor in I don't know how many decades, but I don't think people realized, you know, just how complex some of those are and some of the new things that are out there available, even some higher end things you might not necessarily see very often around here.
Yeah, there's some pretty amazing technology out there. But still, I was talking about combines with a buddy that's in Central Oregon, and he pointed out the new one from John Deere. And one of the bullet points in the catalog was that it had 5 cup holders.
Now, how far back was it that that wasn't even thought about?
It doesn't go too far, but you have growers in certain areas where, like wheat harvest and corn harvest, where they put in a very short window, they put an amazing amount of hours on those machines.
Talk about the local Farm Bureau group. What does it do? How many folks are in it?
So I am the president of the local, the Douglas County Farm Bureau, and it's part of Oregon Farm Bureau, where every county has a chapter. And we're really an advocacy group for agriculture. So we, whether it's at the local level or the state level, we try to give input to our elected officials on what we think needs to change, either in the rules, regulatory rules, or laws regarding agriculture. But we're also kind of a support group. So Farm Bureau has programs for training for safety. They actually have a program for dealing with depression on the farm, what you're going to be talking about tomorrow. So there's a lot of, it's kind of a two-pronged approach to support the community within itself and then to support the community through, it's lobbying. We have staff in Salem that lobbies Salem for what we think we need changed.
And I know historically it seemed like farmers were one of those groups of people that, even though you're all out there separately trying to make a living, everybody seemed to always be ready to hop and help somebody else.
I think that's probably, there's some other industries that are like that, but it's pretty thick in farming. You will seldom see somebody turn away a request for help. It's just the way we do things. And, with Farm Bureau getting that network of growers that's built in, it really helps to be able to find, whether it's knowledge or, somebody with a piece of equipment that you need to borrow in an emergency or something. It's a good network to have. And you asked how many members we have, and we're in the 200s locally.
And how many of those folks are in families that go back kind of like yours a long ways? And how many of them are newer to this?
I'm not sure I could answer that with a percentage, but we do have members who relocated from California and are running ag operations up here. And we have members who have family histories that go back further than mine, which, we're in the 18-somethings, late 1800s, and there's families that go back further than us.
So for being a farmer, what's the best part of all this for you?
Well, for me, it's really getting to have my kids grow up in farming and start to learn it's a very fundamental and basic part of life, growing food. And for them to be able to experience that is because I did when I grew up. And, that's been how we've carried on the family name, family tradition. So having them be involved with it is extremely fulfilling. My son's almost 14, so he's getting to the age where he's getting to be pretty helpful.
Is there any concern among either yours or some of the other longtime farm families that the next generation is going to want to do something else?
Well, that's been the trend. I have one brother and two cousins, and I'm the only one that was interested in carrying it on. And I think that's typical. There's a lot of pull away from the farm, but so far we've been able to keep things going. And I have kids that are very enthusiastic now, and I hope it keeps up.
What's the biggest challenge of trying to farm these days?
The biggest challenge is probably when you want to be out doing something in the field, but you have to be doing paperwork. There's a lot of bureaucracy, whether like for the water contract, it seems like I should just be able to make a phone call and say, I'd like to buy some water, but it was a long drawn out process involving multiple offices, people up in Salem, waiting periods. So dealing with the non-farming stuff to be able to farm.
Evan Cruz of Cruz Farms, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.